I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of all.
Hariom, everybody, and welcome again to ET Yoga. I think I've got a very interesting show for you this evening. We're going to be focusing on higher dimensions and also preparing for contact. But before we get to that heart of the matter, we're going to give a little bit of thanks and appreciation to our listening audience for emailing in this week and giving comments and suggestions concerning the show, and certainly invite our new listeners to do the same. And you can always email me at paperfungo@yahoo.ca. That's paper as in paper, fungo, F-U-N-G-O, at yahoo.ca. And also, while I'm doing a little bit of advertising here, I might as well give a plug for my website at maxwellgreensite.com. And if you're interested in total immunity from disease, then maxwellgreensite.com is what you seek. As a spiritual being, you will not live your life in fear of disease, virus, or flu of any kind. This site was developed as a one-stop shop for self-healing and empowerment. It includes material from some of the greatest yogic masters, such as Ramana Maharshi, Yogananda, Satchidananda, and extraterrestrial knowledge from Bashar, Elin, the Pleiadian Emissaries of Light, the Arcturians, and Mother Mary's College of Christ Consciousness. And it is the site where we do the mental work to find out why a certain condition exists, connect with our higher selves, prepare the body to work optimally, claim our personal sovereignty and power, and cure disease with vibration, belief, love, appreciation, gratitude, natural remedies, the newest discoveries and technologies, and the amazing power of the body to heal itself. Remember, your power ends where your fear begins. Put a positive spin on your outer circumstance and go to healing the known and unknown at MaxwellGreenSight.com. So, to get into the topics this evening, starting off with higher dimensions, actually that's one of my favorite topics, and I'm certain that many or most of the listeners to ET Yoga no doubt have had some experiences in higher dimensions and have begun what used to be called a self-search or quest for enlightenment or whatever label that you like to put on that process. And going back, years ago, this whole concept of higher dimensions, to me, really does start with the whole idea of the idea of enlightenment or an experience in cosmic consciousness, or, again, whatever label you'd like to put on those higher dimensions. And Swami Satchidananda used to say that as many minds as many gods, because he used to equate having that experience with sort of like taking a cup to the ocean. The cup takes the shape, and the water takes the shape that the cup provides, and each mind has its own take on those higher dimensions. And because the rational mind just isn't capable of understanding it, otherwise it would. So it boils down to an experience of sorts. And one of my original teachers, Ramana Maharshi, used to give a who am I technique. And for those who haven't heard that, it kind of goes like this. You place the thought I in the middle of your forehead, and you become that spot, and you try to put your full consciousness into that thought I, and then negate certain aspects of your awareness, such as I am not my physical body, I am not my internal organs, I am not my thoughts, I am not this spot. What spot? And this whole concept of self-inquiry, or called the vichara, was given to some of his more advanced disciples. And with a proper total focus on that process, you can go through a doorway. And one of the ways to experience higher levels of consciousness. And, of course, the beauty of the soul that was Ramana Maharshi was that the first time he did this and went through the doorway, he had an experience that I would equate to a cosmic consciousness or being one with everything. And stayed there. So he was obviously a ripe soul and ready to drop from the tree of life. And for many of us, I know a lot of our listeners are from the 60s and had their own spiritual experiences back in those days, and have been working on the process of enlightenment since that time. And so this whole idea about extraterrestrials and higher consciousness, sort of all, to my way of thinking, goes hand in hand, because as far as my own opinion is that the farther you go in inner space, the farther we'll go in outer space. And certainly this time that we're currently experiencing on the Earth, to me, is the most exciting time to ever be on the planet. Because not only are there amazing strides being made with respect to higher consciousness, but also more and more interest in, and at least individual cases of contact and channelings from extraterrestrial sources. And with regards to this higher dimensions, to me, the higher self, of course, would be certainly a connection that, and according to Bashar, the higher self resides just outside the time-space continuum and is totally part of our total persona. So we have the higher self, and we have the certainly are the brain as an intermediary to the rational thinking mind. And Bashar actually gives a what he calls a mantra that is a message that is to and from your higher self. And it goes like this. Outer circumstances don't matter. Only my state of being matters. What state of being do I prefer? And then you choose the state of being you prefer, if it's joy, and then see any outer circumstance through that particular perspective. And the interesting thing about that is, according to Bashar, it's a message to and from your higher self, and it is a message to the rational mind that the rational mind can understand. And typically, the communication between the higher self and us tends to be in terms of those intuitions or flashes of genius. And certainly, Bashar describes the higher self as the portion of us that can see the road ahead. It's sort of a point of view that the more we can connect with and be in alignment with our higher selves, the better and shorter our path will be towards the goal of attaining a oneness with the higher self. And also in regards to that, he gives some clues with respect to being in alignment with the higher self. And certainly a couple of the comments that Bashar would make would be that the entire universe was created from unconditional love. And there, according to him, there's only two objective facts, that being one, and the second being that we have awareness. And in terms of energy, to my way of thinking, certainly there is, for many of us, there was this loss of connection with our higher selves or with the remembrance of that connection. And to me, that creates the energy of frustration. And also, there's also the creation of the personality construct, which Bashar would equate to a scuba diver intending to have an experience in a more dense reality, such as the water, and needing certain apparatus, which would be analogous to the personality in order to function in that density. And the goggles that the diver wears would be analogous to following your excitement, because without the goggles, it's hard to see where you're going, and without following your excitement, it's hard to be in alignment with the higher self. And one of the reasons he talks about excitement being so important is the fact that when you're doing something that is exciting and you're doing it with integrity, which is maintaining a connection with your awareness of everything being an integral whole, then you are doing what your higher self would like to see you do. And it is clearly an effortless act because it's what you really want and really excites you. And certainly if we're able to do our passion in life, and the more we do what we perceive to be our passion in life, certainly that is also in alignment with the higher self. So this is the radar, the compass that can keep us online. And by following the excitement, and one leads to another excitement. So this is one of the keys that Bashar would give. And in relating this personality construct, certainly one of the very core beliefs is a core fear of death. But underneath the core fear of death is the unconditional love of Prime Creator, God, or whatever, again, label that you would like to use to define the infinite. And this entire process of self-empowerment certainly includes working on some of the beliefs. And in the frequency range of the brain of alpha, beta, theta, and delta, the personality construct, as I understand, is typically around the beta level. And for those who have done any of the remote viewing courses, the one I took certainly talks about some of the beliefs that you would like to change can be done a little more easily from the theta level, which is a little bit deeper than the personality construct. In fact, I've been told that some of the subliminals on television are actually in this area as well, so you can see how powerful some of those can be. And certainly this whole concept of a self-search or enlightenment is certainly, once you're doing that, well, it probably came about through an experience of some type where you realized that there was a possibility of attaining not only a connection with, but a oneness with a higher level of consciousness. And to me, that's called the planting of the seed, and it's an analogous to, in religious circles, a baptism, because it's supposed to be reflective of that rebirth or the planting of the seed. And then once the seed is planted, it grows at the rate it grows. And as Baba Ram Das used to say, when the student's ready, the teacher appears. And that connecting or attracting yourself to proper teachers depends on a couple things. It depends on your sincerity, and it also depends upon a certain falling away of worldliness. Is most people, they hit a space where they're not too sure about where they're going. There's a certain dissatisfaction, but when they place themselves with the proper sincerity, they do attract themselves to the proper information. And lots of different paths, and as Satchitananda would say, truth is one, paths are many. And certainly along the way I've learned there's no prerequisites to enlightenment. There's no set stock of information that everybody needs to learn, although there does tend to be certain commonalities. But in terms of even of finding a proper spiritual teacher, I remember once asking Satchitananda about everybody needed a guru, and he used to say, well, no, but it's kind of like finding an address that you don't know where it is in New York City. If you can find somebody that has been there and knows how to get there, it can cut your time down. And certainly that's one of the reasons that ET Yoga has come about, is trying to cut people's time down. And ET Yoga was developed actually because of a perceived need for information concerning self-empowerment. And what you realize when you go down the road of increasing your self-empowerment is that it also crosses over into healing areas, because the key emotions that you're trying to develop are clearly unconditional love, because it's most in alignment with your higher self, and your higher self is most in alignment with the ultimate source of consciousness. So this connection with higher self and developing gratitude and compassion, anchoring in these energies as much as possible, also is the best antidote for disease. And actually, it's been proven to be so as well, that patients who were taught and trained to emit certain emotions increased their immune systems significantly, like huge. And so this is sort of, to my way of thinking, ties in with a lot of the Pleiadian talk about all disease being at its core being dysfunctional emotion. And so this whole idea about attracting ourselves and working on higher dimensions and connecting with higher dimensions, in a sense, kind of falls into that category of self-empowerment. And in terms of attracting different sort of earth plane scenarios, I like the quote from Bashar, and he says, I'll put it to you this way, there are an infinite number of probable earths, and every single possible scenario will play out, and more precisely is playing out now, since all time is actually simultaneous. However, whatever each individual's vibratory frequency is, that is the determining factor for what probable future reality Earth they will experience. In that our civilization, and he's referring to the Esasani, is communicating to this probable reality Earth, in other words, in that we are capable of having this conversation with you, then that is an indication that you are part and parcel of the probable reality Earth that will allow the positive energy, shall we say, to overbalance the negative. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this conversation. And all the probable reality Earths that do decide to let the negative dominate in their future, we're not having conversations with in the same way at all. And certainly, that also connects to some of the comments that and questions that have been asked of Bashar concerning severe problems with respect to catastrophes. And his response to that is that in some cases it'll be severe, and in other cases it will not be felt at all. It'll depend upon the infrastructure that has been laid down in certain areas on your planet, since there is much density in your world and many different approaches to different things. Different areas will likewise experience the result and consequences in different ways. The basic thing to understand is that when individuals begin to lay down other systems or alternate systems, new ideas, and put them into place, then it will not really matter if the old systems crumble or collapse, for new ones will be there ready and willing to take their place and take up what you call the slack. Now, at the same time, sometimes what you would call a break from the old paradigm may be a welcome thing and give individuals a chance to rethink how they go about setting up certain systems to allow them in the future to become far more flexible, less rigid, and this is a metaphor for how you really need to live your lives as well. So Bashar says, I would simply overall suggest that you don't really worry about it, for I will tell you with absolute certainty, the more you worry about it being a problem, the more you magnetically will draw yourself into a circumstance where you will experience it as a problem. Instead, I would suggest that you allow yourself to treat it as an amazing opportunity to allow systems to shift and change very rapidly, and that you position yourself by your energy and your own certainty so that you know that you will be where you need to be when you need to be there, and so that you will experience, no matter what anybody else's experience, you will personally experience only a beneficial result from such a consequence, instead of a negative one. And certainly developing compassion, having positive expectation and intent will determine well, which version of Earth you end up in. And it'll be determined, no doubt, by the choices you make in response to events staged by the dark forces. And if you respond with compassion, not judgment, not buying into the fear, and realizing that they are playing their role to wake people up so that people will take their place and get their power back, you will find yourself experiencing a less traumatic and harmonious reality. A definitely more harmonious reality. And if you choose to fight the dark using any of their methods, you will find yourselves living a less harmonious and more painful life. And why? Because when we fight something or someone, we do so because we believe they have more power than we do. And in doing so, we give our power to that person or thing. And not only do we empower them or it, we physically manifest that fear in our own lives as well. And what do we fear? Again, some concept or something or someone that we believe has more power than we do. The idea is to not to fight the negative, but to create a new positive with positive expectation and emotion. And certainly projections of worry have a very powerful and insistent frequency that transmits a message with an expectation of problems arising in a very important and crucial purpose. These accelerated times is to clear up the frequency of fear, because all fear is illusion and not in alignment with the higher self. And if you want a peaceful world, you get it by loving peace and not by hating war. And certainly one of the positive things that people can do is to join the Bashar Peace Clock, and that's to take a minute once a day at 12 noon and either pray for peace or in your own way meditate on peace or in some way make a positive contribution to the peace clock. And this was started some years ago, and certainly one of the beneficial things that we can do, because if you follow the Bashar teachings, you start to understand that we as individuals create our outer experience, and we create it through our beliefs and our definitions and our emotions. And as a collective group on the earth, we also create our outer circumstance. In fact, certainly, you know, this whole idea of the peace clock impacts the global consciousness. And since 1998, the Global Consciousness Project has monitored 50 diodes, and these are machines around the globe, in an effort to actually prove if there is a global consciousness of mankind, and does this actually exist. And through the use of these white noise signals, these machines are believed to have the ability to measure if the morphogenetic field is influenced by our behaviors, our interactions with other beings, or even the occurrence of tragic world events. And fascinating as it is, these disturbances have been detected hours before some events even happened. For example, all 50 diodes worldwide simultaneously registered a disturbance in the morphogenetic field 5 hours before the first plane crashed into the World Trade Center. And certainly the 100th monkey effect also shows and proves the connection of consciousness. And with respect to that 100th monkey effect, for those that aren't familiar with that, there was an experiment done on an island with some monkeys where they were taught a technique such as washing dirt off of a potato. And eventually this technique spread throughout the community of apes, because it was a more pleasing way to eat the potatoes. And an amazing thing happened during this experiment was that they call it the 100th monkey effect, because there was, at some point, monkeys on different islands not connected with the original experiment got the technique, which showed that the technique was actually passed through a concept of a morphogenetic field. And all it took was that last one monkey, apparently, that caused this to happen. In other words, at some point in time, there was a critical mass was created. And certainly there's been some talk, even recently, about some experiments that have been done with advertising, where apparently if 7% of the population understands a certain concept, everybody gets it. Now, they're not too sure about, you know, exactly like the whys and the wherefores. It's a field of study. And also, I think in terms of consciousness, some of these kids that were the children of people that had AIDS that have become immune from disease, my understanding through Dronvala Melchizedek is that some of these kids now are they're passing this concept on through the 100th monkey effect, and some adults are also picking up on this. And the scientific explanation is that some of these kids have four codons in their DNA activated that normal humans have shut off. And a very interesting phenomenon, certainly, as well as a lot of the experiments that have been done with the super psychic kids. And if you want to really find some really interesting reading, I would suggest punching up Super Psychic Kids of China on your Google search. And you're going to find that they're doing just some absolutely amazing things, not only psychically, but also in terms of actually making objects float in thin air, actually having solid objects move through other solid objects through intention, stuff that for the most part a lot of people just wouldn't believe. This has now been researched now for about the last 15 years, so there's some amazing things that are going on in the world today, and not very much of it seems to be making the big news. And in connection with this global consciousness and how all of us collectively create the outer circumstance, one of the psychic children said that we'll know which path humanity has chosen if the whales and the dolphins begin interacting with humans in closer ways, and then you will know that you have chosen well. But if they retreat and die, the road ahead will be very difficult. We only ask that you choose well for today's children and tomorrow's. If you choose peace now and allow your minds to flow to that reality, then the political systems will adjust on their own, and you will see results of that in the world. Your emotions are the key. It is the tool you'll use to draw the chosen world into your conscious experience. Your collective emotions have the ability to influence weather patterns and even wars. And you have done this many times without realizing it. If you continue claiming the world you want by feeling that world in your emotions, then it will be so. But if you continue to be influenced by the fear that is so present today, then the world will reflect that as well. And to me, again, this is clearly a way that our collective beliefs and thoughts and definitions and emotions will create the external circumstance. And to my way of thinking, this is both individually and collectively. And I think that in direct connection to that, a rudimentary study of quantum physics will certainly also reveal this, as well as the powers of positive expectation. And when we talk about the quantum physics or we talk about energy, it always reminds me of Bashar's talking about the theory of prime radiant. And if you're interested in a physical demonstration of this concept, I would suggest that you go to YouTube and you go to Bashar's lab. And it's at the, Bashar's lab is probably in about 18 parts, but it's in about the first couple of two or three parts that the basic concept of prime radiant is there. And it kind of, to me, is something that scientists eventually will embrace, and because it is a theory about everything being one particle, and this one particle is massless but travels at infinite speed. And the demonstration he gives is lighting a large bulb, and it'd be representative of this one particle. And certainly when scientists study energy at this level, and for those of you who are, I guess, experts in quantum physics or its study, he uses the concept one particle for lack of having to explain all the time that a particle fluctuates between a wave and a particle. And so when you have this one light that's lit up, let's say, in a dark background, and then you have another bulb, say, 10 feet apart, and you light that bulb up, but turning the first one off, you notice that the obviously the energy appears to move from one bulb to the other. And then when you turn the second bulb off and go back to the first, then the energy moves back to where the first bulb was. Now, as you increase the speed between the two bulbs, what you realize is as you reach a certain point, the light appears to be in both places at once. And this is the concept. If you had 10 bulbs and the light traveled fast enough, it would all appear that all 10 light bulbs were on. And this is the concept of prime radiant, that everything is one particle that travels at infinite speed, and it appears to be everywhere at once. And this is a concept that Bashar suggests that we try to use, because in effect, what it shows is that everything is one thing, but seen from different perspectives. And I think this is certainly a key component that scientists will eventually embrace. And Bashar explains this, that as this particle crosses over itself, actually is what creates different dimensions. And also it has inherent in this particle these amazing geometrical patterns, which manifest as the some specifics in our different dimensions. And when scientists study these subatomic particles or waves, what they've noticed is that as they're studied by the scientists, they respond to the preconceived ideas of the scientist who is studying them. In other words, it's the scientist's mode of thinking that determines whether the energy is a wave or a particle. And the energy being studied begins to take form immediately based on the thoughts and beliefs of the scientist who's observing it. And if a scientist studied this energy with the expectation, thought, or belief of seeing particles, then particles were observed. And if another scientist studied them with the expectation of seeing waves, then waves were observed. And if they were studied with the expectation of the first being seen as waves and then changing to particles or vice versa, this is exactly what happened. And the conclusion was that this energy, these subatomic particles, they act and respond in exact proportion to the thoughts and beliefs that the scientist who was studying them used at that moment. And this discovery further proved to the scientist that anything and everything that exists in our world once existed as a wave, and we can call that spiritual, and through individual observation and expectation was transformed into a particle, which you can call made physical, based only on what they thought and believed it would appear as. And now to take this even a step further, scientists discovered that when subatomic particles were broken in half or separated in a laboratory setting, they have the ability to communicate with each other, and that communication is received immediately from one to the other with zero regard to space and time as we know it, regardless of how far apart they are. And this totally blows away the old theory that nothing can travel faster than the speed of light, because energy doesn't need to travel. It's already interconnected with all other energy. And this means that everything in the entire cosmos is nothing but a huge vibrating ball of interconnected infinite energy, which has the ability to communicate into infinity with no regard to space and time. And what this energy joins together to form is based only on individual thought. So your thoughts, which are also energy, which are determined by your beliefs, are broadcast outward onto the infinite field of wave energy, much like a radio frequency transformed from waves, the spiritual realm, to particles, which we call matter, and joined together with additional energies which vibrate at a harmonious frequency and collectively join to shape what you come to see and experience in physical form in the physical world, your physical world, or your capital U-niverse. And you quite literally have the ability to mold and shape the various areas of your life based on how you choose to think, believe, and feel. And this is how our world was created to operate, regardless of what you may currently believe to be true. You are not the victim of some capricious set of circumstances. You are quite literally the creator of your own reality. And this is, again, to my way of thinking, it's quantum physics that basically proves Bashar's teachings. And certainly that these ideas in connection with, seeing the world as an integrated whole are the keys. And I think this also brings to mind a couple of points in that what basically Bashar is saying is one of the ways that the universe shows this unconditional love is that the universe supports us 100% in our beliefs. Even the belief that you're not loved, it will support you in that belief as well. And that's what Bashar says, that's how much you're loved, even to that extent. And also, related to this idea was, if you haven't tuned into some of the Dan Burrish material, Dan Burrish, very interesting guy. He has it's about an hour and 45-minute interview at Project Camelot. And Dan's been involved with what he calls some retrieved extraterrestrial technologies that he calls Looking Glass and the Cube. And apparently these devices are... one in particular is used to see probable future realities, and apparently it's some of the abuse that's been happening over the last 40 or 50 years with some of this technology has caused some interesting problems. And according to him, there was a treaty called Tau 9 where a lot of this technology has been now shut down, placed in separate places on the Earth so that it can't be put together unless all three parties are consenting. And some of this information with the Looking Glass is that, according to Dan at least, buy it or not, he says that he has
look through using one of these devices, and at one point in time was having thoughts of sort of an Armageddon scenario when looking at probable future reality. That's what he saw. And I think this clearly reflects, at least if it is true that that happened, clearly reflects the concept that expectation is huge, and that if you expect and believe to be involved in a very negative scenario, then in point of fact, you can be attracted to that. And some of the other technologies that from apparently some of the retrieved extraterrestrial craft includes the concept of their creating a vortex, which acts in coordination and conjunction with the pilot in a chair, and the chair and the pilot interfacing with this vortex. And through a meditation, that they are able to actually, the pilot is actually able to intend where the ship should go, at what place and time. And according to Dan, there's been quite a bit of actual research done with time travel. And actually, some of the quotes from some of the people that have done this say that it's the most fantastic feeling I've ever experienced in my whole life. It was like I'm one with the universe. I could be a star, I could be a planet, I could zoom in on any planet, I had access to all knowledge there ever was to know, I could be a subatomic particle, I could be an atom, a molecule, I could fly anywhere, do anything, know anything, be anything. It seems like there's no time, it just goes on eternally, absolute ecstasy. And it was the most wonderful thing I've ever experienced in my whole life. And don't ever want to leave it. So again, this, you know, to me ties back to like having that experience where there's the planting of the seed. And according to Dan, that there was a 20-year wave that on some of these time travelers that came out, which apparently was a natural harmonic of the Earth in its rotation. And there was a point that along this 20-year line, it's almost like a time tunnel, and the people that were doing these time travel experiments were hit what they called the bump. And interesting to note that later on, when they this is when they hit this bump, is when they had these fantastic experiences and feelings. And when they looked to see afterwards, where they were able to figure out where the bump was, it actually turned out to be December 21st of 2012, which is kind of interesting. And also, I think in connection with Dan Burr's testimony, he talks about natural stargates. And these are points where the global grid lines cross. And he says you have two counter-rotating geometries on the Earth, one that pretty much stays stable and determines the shape of the continents, and then there's another one that we don't see, which counter-rotates, and as the two go through each other at certain points, the nodes will cross. And he says the Bermuda Triangle is a natural stargate. And when these two nodes cross over each other, the nodes connect. And when the alignment is right, then you can end up flying through this vortex and fly clear through time and space and end up not in our reality anymore. And, I mean, to my way of thinking, this also connects with the whole idea of Earth ascension. And it was a long time ago when someone told me that actually that every object in 3D is actually surrounded by a Merkaba. And if you're not familiar with or have a hard time visualizing the Merkaba, I would punch up 3D Merkaba on your computers. And what you'll see is almost like is like a pyramid shape and an inverted pyramid, and they're intertwined with each other, and they counter-rotate in opposite directions. And actually, I give instructions concerning a Merkaba meditation on one of the tapes at the maxwellgreensite.com. And at that site, there is a, it's the one called XYZ, Extraterrestrial Meditation. And on there is actually a Merkaba meditation as well. And that's 1995 at maxwellgreensite.com. So if you're interested in doing a Merkaba technique, you can find one there. And certainly, some of this information about the Merkaba struck me is that when you have these two counter-rotating tetrahedrons and they counter-rotate at the speed of light, then the object that's in the center of the tetrahedrons actually rises through, goes to the next dimension. And to me, that would be a perfect possibility for the Earth in terms of ascending into 4D. And so this Dan Burrish information, sort of, and natural stargates, you know, certainly opens up a lot of interesting ideas concerning higher dimensions and the amazing times that we live in and some of the amazing technologies that eventually will filter down into the public range. Now, when we start to also talk about this outer circumstance or outer reality, there's been another recent discovery in the field of quantum physics and medicine that revealed that we have a second neural network in our bodies, and it is located in our hearts. And furthermore, it was discovered that this field, rather than the one in the brain, is the one that interfaces with the morphogenetic field. So this, and this is also known as the field or the mirror of life in our reality. And the heart has been shown to have an electromagnetic energy field, and if you can imagine this, 5,000 times greater than that of the brain. And this field can be measured physically with magnetometers up to 10 feet beyond the physical body. And certainly this provides support for the spiritual teachings that indicate that the human have energy fields that constantly intermingle with each other and enabling healing or negative thoughts to be extended and exchanged. And to me, this is just so typical, again, of the whole idea of Bashar's teachings, that outer circumstances aren't the primary consideration. The primary consideration is the vibratory frequency or emotion that you're emitting, because this is the one that most directly interfaces with the morphogenetic field. So, again, a confirmation of Bashar's teachings. Now, with respect to the concept of preparing for contact, to my way of thinking, the best way is to raise your own frequency. And certainly the quantum physics tells us that it is the act of observing an object or events or conditions and circumstances that causes it to be there, and that certainly the outcome is based only on the choice that we have on how we choose to observe it. And again, this is one of those concepts that and Bashar's teachings, again, that circumstances do not come with built-in meaning. And this, to me, is a huge, huge a concept, because outer circumstances don't come with built-in meaning. It's the meaning you give to outer circumstances that determines your experience. And this is, to me, just just a phenomenal that I've never come across this in all my yogic studies, and I don't know, through college or whatever, the what textbooks there are in psychology. Where have we seen, and if any of our listeners know where this information is other than in the Seth material and in other, I'll say other, extraterrestrial channeled information, I don't know where it's found. We in our society have been taught to believe that, you know, external circumstances, okay, they come with the built-in meaning, and everybody sort of views these external things happening the same. Well, it's not true. I mean, a meal can one man's meat's another's poison. The same event can be a totally joyous event for one person and totally devastating to another. Only logic can show us this. And the fact is that circumstances don't come with built-in meaning. And again, I don't know how many weeks we challenge our listeners to do the technique. When you view something as being negative, take the time to throw a positive spin on it. And after you throw a positive spin on it, then see how it turns out. And log it, you know, keep track of these things. And once you see the connection, once you see it working, it just, it is, it's stunning. It blows your mind because it works. And it's, to my way of thinking, one of the most incredible teachings that's come from Pleiadians and from Bashar. And that's that the outer circumstances don't come with built-in meaning. And any event that happens, if you throw a positive spin on it, it can have a positive experience. And I call this technique stacking the deck of life in your favor. Because once you catch on to it, the point is that you throw a positive spin on everything. It's all good. You can learn from everything. And it's just a totally freeing idea, and certainly from anybody's perspective, whether you believe in that or not, what possible advantage could there ever be from placing a negative spin or a negative motion on anything other than creating a negative synchronicity? So anyway, moving on, scientists have done studies now with people connected to EEG brain scanning devices while watching television, and they registered activity in the delta wave frequencies, essentially occupying a highly programmable sleep state while watching TV. And if you are unaware of your thoughts or have abdicated your choice to direct your thinking, the electronic methods can easily influence and control your mind. And your conscious mind sets the commands, and the subconscious mind is the processing center where the directives or beliefs are filtered and then carried out. So empowering your life begins when you have control of your thoughts, and you must decide what you want and proceed to attain it. Otherwise, your commands will have no conscious intent to direct the course of your life. So to me, most importantly, is the spin you put on outer circumstances, and that, you know, this virtually creates reality. And if TV is putting the spin on most of your information and putting a negative or fear spin on events and you buy it, then your experience is going to be negative. So this is a hugely important area. And the reason I'm bringing it up here is because what we're trying to do with respect to prepare for contact is to raise our own frequencies. And this is done through self-empowering methods. The farther we attain a frequency that most approximates our higher self, the more likely we are to have an extraterrestrial experience, and the sooner our humanity has that contact with extraterrestrial experience, because we need to bridge the gap. And certainly this television can be a very powerful and potentially hazardous medium. So this is something that I think is important, and it's also been shown that the television lowers the frequency of the immune system. So if we're doing something, you know, this is a tool that needs to be used sparingly, very sparingly. And the same with the internet, because it also connects to subliminals on the internet. So internet, TV, same thing. We need to utilize these technologies, but in a very, very limited way. And Pleiadians talk about for every hour you spend with this type of technology, try to spend an hour in nature. And certainly, the Pleiadians have also suggested optimum ways to increase our frequencies. One of those is using the pillar of light technique and also the Pleiadian spinning techniques. Now, if you're interested in learning how to do those, again, at the site, maxwellgreensite.com. On that same tape where the XYZ, extraterrestrial meditation, is, the Mirkabeck technique, also I also explained the Pleiadian spinning techniques and pillar of light techniques. So it's all there, 1995, at maxwellgreensite.com. Another amazing thing that you can do to, in terms of keeping the body in optimum mode with respect to the immune system, are the Egyptian healing rods. And these have been shown scientifically that 7 minutes of using the rods is like having half hour of acupuncture. So if you've got a set of rods and using them for 15 minutes a day, it's like an hour a day of acupuncture. It helps to balance your internal clocks, and also helps activate higher your higher chakras. So Egyptian healing rods. And you can research that at www.EgyptianHealingRods.com. And I think that certainly we have the tools and we have the abilities out there to increase the frequency and our own frequency, which is our best possible way of preparing for contact. And as usual, I'd like to wish our listening audience my sincerest best towards your attainment of full consciousness, perfect health, and abundance. And I hope you tune in again next week. Good night.
I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of all.